share their name with a sin. There's a pride of lions, sure, but that's a collective noun. They don't have a greed or a lust at the Singapore Zoo. And Tim Roth isn't spelt with a W. And just in case I wasn't disadvantaged enough, you blessed me with only three toes that are actually too claw-like to grab onto stuff. And this simian face and this damn ursine nose to top it off. Oh, and then you went and called me a sloth. Lord, I have always done my best. This cross that I bear has put hair on my chest. And with the three claws that you gave me, I've clawed my way up to the top of the tree. But up here I'm tired and I'm lonely as well. I've got few slothy friends and no slothy girl. It's really quite tough being a three-toed sloth in this five-fingered hustle-bustle world.
You've been listening to Mark Watson Makes the World Substantially Better, written and performed by Mark Watson, with music from Tim Minchin and poetry from Tim Key. The producer was Katie Marsden.
Next week's deadly sin is wrath, so expect grapes. That's all for the Comedy Club for tonight. I'd like to end by reciting one of the great soliloquies of Hamlet, but because it's a comedy club, I'm going to do it whilst gargling. Here we go.
I have a plague, wherefore I know not, lost all my mirth. Like an old custom of exercise, the disease goes so heavily with oats.
That's the end of that experiment. Good night.
Enter the seventh dimension. BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Hello there and welcome to the seventh dimension. I'm Natalie Haynes and I'm very excited to tell you that we've had another update about the imminent arrival of our Imperial Galactic visitors. They're due in just a couple of minutes, or maybe days, or weeks, depending on how easy they find it to park. Anyway, I'll keep you posted if I get more precise details. That's the trouble with space travel, you see. It's all so vague. Now it's time for the concluding episode of The Glass Bead Game, a drama of strategy and destiny set in a utopian future. Last time we met Joseph, he was making his way into the intellectually elite ranks of the Castalian Order, who spend their time studying and playing the Glass Bead Game. Will Joseph's success demand that he compromise his principles?
The Glass Bead Game by Hermann Hesse, dramatised by Lavinia Greenlaw.
And so, Joseph Connect was to be appointed to the highest possible office in Castalia, that of Magister Ludi, master of the Glass Bead Game. The signs had been there from the moment he had been plucked from his classroom and sent to the finest of the elite schools. Every step of his career, every opportunity, test and reward had been overseen by those who now gave him this role. At some level, he had always known that this was his fate and that he could not escape it. He had neither resisted nor ever been entirely sure of it. And now his friend, Fritz Tegularius, had told him the news.
They say there were a couple of murmurings about your youth. I mean, no one's been made magister at the age of 40, and there were two other candidates, but neither came.
I wish you wouldn't talk so much, my friend.
Well, yes, but...
I don't want to listen to this tittle-tattle.
But, Joseph,
go and join your friends. Go. Please. Leave me alone.
I thought you'd want to know. From me, I rushed over here. And you know what? I felt... really proud of you, Joseph. Delighted and proud.
Why now? Why so soon?
Joseph Knecht, by placing these robes upon your shoulders and these keys in your hands, I thereby invest you with the role and duties of Magister Ludi.
I, Joseph Knecht, humbly accept this great honor and do hereby state that I will serve and abide by the laws of Castalia.
It was not a majestic or even a public ceremony, but Joseph was overwhelmed. All the more so when he saw the old music master standing back beside the organ.
Master, you came all this way.
Oh, I wanted to keep an eye on things. I would have liked to have played for you myself, but my hands these days are... Well, Yosef, dear Yosef, I am so pleased.
Thank you. How are you, Master?
Never mind me. They'll be wanting you in a moment, and I'd like to give you a little advice. Manage the next few weeks well. A lot will be asked of you, but you must devote as much attention as you can to the elite. They are, as you know, an exacting bunch who will not take authority from anyone they do not respect. You need, above all, to gain their confidence and trust. Trust everyone who is sent to help you, Yosef, and trust yourself, too. Believe in your own strength.
My own strength?
The elite will test you, so be on your guard. But you will win through, Yosef. Of that, I am sure.
Knecht did not shrink from his duties, although he was astonished by the demands made upon him. Teaching, seminars, council meetings, directorates. Every hour accounted for, and every day reviewed and assessed. There was also the difficult question of his assistant, or shadow. When the last magister had been taken fatally ill, Joseph had seen how his shadow was made a scapegoat for the disastrous public games that followed. His body had been found later at the foot of a cliff.
I will not impose that office on anyone. The committee can choose someone for me. I must focus on my sessions with the elite.
Good morning, Reverend Magister.
Good morning, Reverend Magister.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Take a seat and we shall begin. Now, the first principle of the deployment of semantics.
Look at you, Joseph Knecht. You look as if you've been dipped in glaze and fired like a pot. You're all cooled and hardened.
If Joseph did appear cool and hardened, it had the right effect. Within 4 weeks, he had won the acceptance, even the approval, of the elite. These critical, wary, quick-witted young men submitted to him as their master. And suddenly, everything went smoothly, as if all that had been needed was a drop of oil. He was soon known as an outstanding teacher and a widely admired leader. And yet the deeper he entered the heart of Castalia, the more his doubts grew about its future. As he studied the province's history, he saw more and more clearly that its great age was already behind it. Eventually, there came a time when he felt compelled to warn the players of the future of the glass bead game.
Today, you complete your training as teachers of elementary courses in the glass bead game. As you go forth and take up your vocation, remember that we cultivate our noble and perilous sport with the idea of unity. We want all to feel its message and allure.
Yeah!
Yeah! But I also want to leave you with a difficult thought. We are not living in a golden age. Our public games are not those of a generation ago that lasted for weeks and attracted audiences from all over the world. We are living, it has to be said, in an age of decline. You, The next generation of players must excel so as to remind the world of the true potential of the glass bead game. If not, our annual games will strike our guests as no more than empty ceremony. And then how quickly would the game be endangered? So remember, the future of the game lies with those for whom it is a sacred endeavor. One practiced without vanity, ambition, or superstition. The future lies with you.
The beech forests above Valsel were turning brown when one day Connect took a little book with him into the Magister's private garden.
The Pocket Calendar for the Magister Ludi by Ludwig Vasemala. Now, he was master, let me see, 70 or was it 80 years ago? The third week of September. Turn your thoughts to the coming annual game. From now on, do not let a week pass without giving some consideration to your plan. Don't fret, Magister Vasemala. I have the seed of the game already, and I know exactly whom I need to help me. Come in.
You wanted to see me, Reverend Magister.
So, Fritz, do you remember the time I failed to convert you to the virtues of Eastern philosophies?
I beg your pardon?
Only the problem is you have no Chinese.
No Chinese? What for?
For the devising of the game.
What game?
The game, Fritz. The annual game. We only have the winter to prepare.
You want me to...
The underlying precept concerns the I Ching. And so you would need to familiarise yourself with the book and its related philosophy and practice.
Are you asking me to work with you on the next annual game?
Well, I'm clearly going to need some help.
And you want me?
Who else?
Joseph! I mean, Magister! Yes, of course! The I Ching, eh? Of course! A piece of cake! And as for the business of learning Chinese, well, what's an ancient language between friends?
Quite so. Now, to work. First, you must study the nature of a Chinese house and the rules underlying its construction. I should send you to the Far Eastern College. No, I have an even better idea. I'll send you to Elder Brother.
To tickle carp and rustle yarrow stalks.
Exactly. If he wanted to, we could make you as Chinese as he is.
Fritz arrived at the bamboo grove, only to be politely but firmly turned away.
I didn't get to see the fish. I'd have liked to see the fish.
Well, I shall send you to the Far Eastern College. From what I remember, they have fish there.
Over the winter, Josef spent whatever spare time he could find working with Fritz on the game. Although he left the entire selection from the archives, as well as the first and second drafts, to his friend, Fritz was in his element. He was one of those people who can linger for hours over a bouquet of flowers or a set table that anyone else would regard as complete, rearranging the details with nervous, loving manipulations, turning the smallest task into an absorbing day's work. Josef, meanwhile, had his endless duties to attend to. The only time he requested leave was when a message came to say that the old music master was dying. Josef cancelled everything and travelled to Montaport the next day. When he got back, Fritz found him in his office looking deeply shaken.
What's happened? What did he say?
Nothing.
Nothing?
I sat down with him. I asked questions. How was he? How was he finding the winter? What music was he studying? He gave no replies, so I made observations. How happy I was to see him again. How little time I had for music these days.
And?
He met everything with a smile.
How long did this go on?
About half an hour, but it felt like half a day. I was about to give up when, at last, he offered a few words.
Oh, thank God. What did he say?
You are tiring yourself, Josef.
What did he mean by that?
Oh, I know exactly what he meant. I stopped talking, stopped trying, and just sat with him.
And what then? What happened then?
And then I went away.
Josef Knecht would undertake his duties in an exemplary manner, right up until his final day in office. However, as we have been able to deduce, his innermost self was already growing weary. We might ask, was he right to seek to free himself from the burden of his allotted role? Was he justified in taking such drastic and destructive action? These questions are undoubtedly important, but they have been discussed elsewhere. We do not feel that it is our place to attempt to answer them. Josef and Fritz worked through the winter and were rewarded when spring came and their game was a resounding success. Remembered as the Chinese house game, it is cited to this day. Josef Knecht oversaw proceedings with calm, strength and dignity. He took his place in the great hall in his gold and white ceremonial robes and began to conduct step after step of the game, using the ritual gestures. With a gold tablet and stylus, he inscribed characters which appeared on a screen at the back of the hall. They were whispered by the audience, called out by speakers, and broadcast to the country and the entire world. For the Directorate of Castalia, here was the proof that they had been right to elect Josef Knecht to high office. The elite were in excellent spirits throughout. It was altogether a splendid festival.
We did it, Josef! We did it!
I believe we did. It was one of those moments when the game came so close to perfection that it's sad to think how it is bound to pass. But think of it, we must.
What a strange man you are. At the pinnacle of your career, on the day of your greatest success, you want to remind us all that nothing will last. Why?
I don't know. I've always had this sense of how quickly everything changes and disappears and how hard it is for the mind to deal with. It meant things were never really in place. Whereas you, Fritz, you're willful and moody and you don't fit in. You're never really in place, are you?
No, I don't want to be. I just want to be left alone to study, to think.
Which is quite right. But also wrong. Castalia is not alone. It cannot be left alone or leave alone. Because after all, it is the outside world that produces everything we analyse in our game. We extract rules and patterns and build something out of them, which of course is all very fine. But not everyone can spend his life breathing, eating and drinking, nothing but abstractions.
And with this historic statement, we have come to the point in our study where we must focus our attention upon the remarkable change of course that occupied the last years of the master's life. In truth, we would prefer to postpone it for a while and continue to recall his faultless conduct in office. But Josef Knecht's period in office was to come to an unusual, sensational, and, to the minds of many, a scandalous end. Knecht made several more visits to the ailing music master, and one day the news came that the old man had died. We know from several statements that Josef would have liked to have written his biography, but official duties left him no time. As he once remarked, he found himself caught in a net of responsibility that tightened the more he tried to move inside it.
Magister, may I introduce Plinio Designori, member of the Chamber of Deputies, who will sit today as their representative on the Supreme Board.
Plinio, I confess I didn't recognize you at first.
Reverend Magister, it is a great pleasure to see you again.
And you. So tell me about life in the world of politics. How are you?
I am well, thank you, Magister.
I wouldn't have known him. Plinio.
If I may call
so grey and subdued.
Knecht followed up this awkward encounter with an invitation for Designore to visit him at Balsall.
Thank you, Reverend Magister, for your kindness, but matters of state prevent me from accepting.
I understand, dear Plinio, but I also insist.
We are in no position to report how Knecht regained his friend's trust, but those of us who were familiar with the Magister's serene and affectionate manner can imagine how impossible it would have been for Designore to resist him. Some months later, Plinio arrived at Balsall.
I wanted to show you as much as I could, but you must come back and see the Magister's garden in summer. Oh, and there are Magister Thomas's paintings.
Joseph, you have shown me your life, and I would like to tell you something of mine. These have been difficult years.
I thought they may have been. I've been concerned about you ever since we last met. Please, speak freely.
Although my father and I have very different political views, I've inherited his sense of public duty. I dreamt of a career in politics, and after leaving Castalia, went straight to university to study under Professor Mann.
Ah, yes. I've read of him.
There is no better political thinker in the academy, Joseph. But as for my fellow students, my tutors, even... Remember all that time I spent at school defending the ordinary people? Well, they turn out to be dull and shallow and crude. And not only that, but they are also as narrow-minded, arrogant and precious as the most affected Castalian show-off. But even so, I have dedicated my life to reconciling our two worlds, to building understanding, to interpreting and mediating, and it's been a complete waste of time. I have failed, Joseph.
In what way have you failed? What was it at heart that you wanted to do?
I suppose what I wanted, only I wasn't really aware of it till recently. I suppose I wanted to understand the world, and for it to understand me.
We all want that, Plinio. And you have done more than most to make it possible.
And I have failed.
It's clear you've worked very hard and suffered greatly.
What you see as suffering is evidence of life. And above all, I have lived. In a world with women and children, hunger and pain, real life with real work and... I shouldn't be imposing myself on you like this. You have been so generous with your time, and Lord knows you've heard all this before.
It's no imposition. The struggles you speak of, the disappointment, the drive to reconcile, it's all familiar to me. I don't know which of us is the authentic human being, but I know what we share. And hearing you ask the same questions as I do makes those questions all the more urgent for me.
What are you saying? Are you in trouble?
Like you, I am in danger of wearing myself out with such wonderings. Now then, I can give you one piece of advice. Nothing helps more than the daily meditation. I suspect you haven't kept up the practice.
Oh, I gave it up along with the game.
I hadn't realized you'd stopped playing the game.
Really? Well, I'm afraid you were partly responsible.
What do you mean?
That time we met while I was here on a guest course. We had dinner and you treated me with such polished courtesy it bordered on contempt. I left vowing to have nothing more to do with Castalia. No more meditation, no more glass beads, no more music. I found other amusement. Drink, whores, all the drugs I could lay my hands on.
I see. And you still...
Oh, I've stopped all that, of course.
So life is better again?
Not exactly. I can't sleep without a handful of pills, and there are times when I go back to the bottle.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Is that all you have to say? You're not appalled? Disgusted?
I'm not here to judge you, Plinio. As I said, at a deeper level, we are asking the same questions, and so it helps me greatly to be able to.
Are you in trouble, Yusuf?
Not now, my friend. It's getting dark, and we must return.
A sky full of black clouds. How very fitting.
A strange quiver went through Plinio's heart. He could not tell whether it was grief or happiness. Now they had broken the ice, Plinio and Joseph were firm friends once more.
Why is that man always here?
You mean my friend De Signori?
Well, who else? He turns up looking like some kind of salesman with nothing but small talk, and you drop everything and go off with him for hours.
Don't be cross, Fritz. He's an old friend who has suffered greatly, and I'm trying to bring him back out of his shell. Besides which, he does me good.
But how?
Plinio had asked Joseph to visit him at home many times since their reunion. In his eighth year as Magister, he applied for and received permission from the Directorate and the President to accept this invitation. It took him another year to fix a date. After all, this was his first step into the world that had given Plinio his great melancholy. And the Magister, it has to be said, appears to have been somewhat afraid. Joseph arrived at a large, modern house to be greeted by Plinio's wife, Helena. A stately, reserved woman, she welcomed him as if he were an officer from an occupying army who had been billeted in her home.
Magister Knecht, we have been expecting you. Come in.
Madam, it's really very kind of you to extend your gracious hospitality.
My husband has been determined that you will come. He will be delighted to see you.
Ma, I need some cash. Carlo's picking me up later and we're going to... Who's this?
Tito.
Joseph Knecht. And you must be Tito.
Well, yes, like she said. Anyway, Ma, the money.
Magister Knecht is our guest for dinner, Tito. You will be here for dinner, won't you?
I suppose so. I know who you are. The master Dad's always going on about. I thought you'd be taller.
Tito, remember your manners. I apologise for my son.
No need. I like a show of youthful spirits.
Youthful spirits.
Joseph! Welcome. Welcome. Take his coat, Tito.
You take it.
Don't be difficult, Tito. Not today.
Take the coat, Tito.
Really, it's no...
Can I take your coat for you, sir?
Thank you.
And then you can go to your room, young man.
What's the point? It's almost time for dinner and I saw Cook stuffing a goose. I'm starving.
I'll show you up, Joseph, and then we can have a drink in my study.
Could I prevail on you not to linger over your drink, my dear? We eat in 15 minutes.
Goody. Of course, my dear. We shall be at table promptly. You'll see, Joseph, the cook has exhaled herself in your honour.
If you will excuse me, my dear, I will ensure all is in order.
Ma, are we having rosemary potatoes? I can't stand a goose without rosemary potatoes. Now, about that cash.
Family life?
As you once observed, it's all quite new to me.
We aren't exactly a fine example.
Oh, not at all. Your wife is very gracious.
Yes. Yes, she is. Very gracious.
And Tito has such, zest.
Let's call it that, shall we? Zest. I like that. Zest. Now, let's get you settled in.
Joseph was intrigued by this household, where his friend, such a force in the outside world, was clearly not master, and where relations were clearly so fraught. He was to make several more visits, and while Plinio's world grew, if anything, more strange to him, he enjoyed all it made him think about. Helena De Signori also started to trust Joseph and to open up to him.
Where is Tito? I am sorry, Magister, but he's disappeared again.
Never mind. How are his studies? He was having some difficulty with quadrilateral equations last time I came.
He says school is a waste of time. I'm afraid he's starting to run a little wild.
It's a pity you didn't send him to Castalia in time for us to make something of him.
Castalia? But he'd never have been admitted. My son is gifted in ways, but not gifted enough for Castalia. And he can be somewhat hard to handle.
I wasn't being entirely serious.
And I would never impose such expectations on him. After all, look at what Castalia did to his father.
Really, my dear?
Forgive me. I didn't mean to offend. It's just that we... Plinio and I have freed ourselves of all that family tradition and expectation. We have no contact with Plinio's father at all, do we, my dear?
No, we do not. Now, who would like a little more fish?
You see, that's not the life we have chosen. The one in which a child is sent away to an artificial environment to be so intensively conditioned.
Joseph, more fish?
In any case, I wouldn't. I couldn't be parted from him. He's my child. He's what makes life worth living.
So, Joseph, You said you had something important to discuss. Perhaps we should take our coffee in my study. Would you excuse us, my dear?
Of course, my dear. I'll have your coffee sent up. Will you take your usual Linden tea, Magister?
Thank you, yes.
So, Yosef, what is it?
This will be the first time I've put this into words.
Put what?
I have come to a decision. An answer, if you like.
An answer to what?
To the question you and I share. Of what to do when the thing you have devoted your life to proves not to be what you thought it was.
Are you saying that you no longer believe in Castalia?
Oh, I believe in Castalia. That's the problem. I believe in it so utterly that I cannot ignore the fact that it is no longer what it should be. Nor can I ignore what my studies of its history have taught me. Castalia has become cut off from the world that gave it purpose and existence. It is in a terminal state of decline.
But you were changing that. Your whole life, your careers...
Come on, Plinio. You and I both know I cannot stop what's happening.
And so?
There is no other course for me to take. I have to resign.
But you can't.
I believe the Constitution allows me to offer my resignation. Whether or not it is accepted is another matter.
But you can't. I mean, it doesn't happen. It's never happened. You can't.
Are you so very surprised that I might want to?
Well, forgive me. I'm just amazed. It's like a god deciding that he doesn't want to be a god anymore. It wouldn't occur to me that it could be done. But of course, you'll have thought it through and you have your reasons. And yes, I think I understand what they might be. But you realize what this will mean. Exile from the province and a new life. A life for which you are, I'm afraid, largely unequipped. I'll do all I can to help you, of course. And you have a home with us here, should you want it. But are you sure?
You are very kind. And yes, I might need to accept shelter with you for a while. Thank you, Plinio. I can't tell you what it means to have spoken of it at last. This conversation has turned an idea into a decision. I'm going to resign and leave Castalia and find work as a tutor, which is the work I most love.
When? Right away?
Not right away. I have to build my case, and there's someone I need to persuade to help me.
Yosef waited, considered, and hesitated for a long time before confiding in Fritz about his plans. He had, of course, talked at length with his friend about his view that Castalia was going through an inevitable and terminal phase of decay. And when one day their conversation touched on this again, Yosef announced his plans. Fritz's response was something of a surprise.
This is too good. Too good by half.
You seem to be actually amused by the idea.
I am. You know how I hate all these committees and regulations and protocols and red tape? How they try to make life so neat and tidy. If there's an opportunity to outwit the authorities, then I'm your man.
Do you mean it? You see, I was going to ask for your help. I need a collaborator.
An accomplice, you mean? Oh, I'll be that, all right. Together we shall construct a case so brilliant and irrefutable that you will be given your freedom.
And what then?
What do you mean, what then? You'll have got what you wanted. You will have won.
I'm serious, Fritz. What then?
So, Yosef, is your friend Tegularius helping with your plans?
I have him busy researching my case. He's going to help me draft a petition asking that I be allowed to resign.
Now, why is it that you don't sound entirely convinced of the point of all that?
Because it will be futile.
I thought as much. A board that would release its magister is...
Wouldn't be a proper board at all. I believe in the system enough to have faith that it will refuse me.
So why set Tegularius this task?
To keep him busy. To make him happy.
And what about you, Yosef? What will keep you busy and happy once you're free? I assume you're going to leave, whether or not you're allowed to resign.
Yes, I am.
And what is it you'd like to do?
Would you be able to find me a place to live? And some work, no matter how modest? A music teacher, for instance?
Yeah,
position like that could be found easily enough. As for a place to live, my house is at your disposal for as long as you like.
Thank you, Plinio, but I couldn't be a guest. I must earn my keep.
Well, I wouldn't worry about that. Well, once you've made your break and it's known, you'll be offered a position at the university, a professorship at the very least.
Maybe so, but I'm not seeking a public appointment. My needs are very simple. A room, my daily bread, and above all, some work, some task as a teacher.
In that case, I do have something to propose. As you know, this house has its tensions, the most difficult of which is between me and my son. He is spoiled and impudent, and somehow manages to lord it over the rest of us. We, his mother and I, are to blame. We have courted him and deferred to him since he was a young child.
That does seem to be the case.
You can see what I'm driving at. It would be a piece of immense good fortune were Tito to have the right teacher, someone who could properly take him in hand. It's a selfish thing to ask, I know, but what you said about teaching made me dare to think you might...
No proposal could be more welcome. All we need is the agreement of your wife.
Really? Well, that's wonderful.
There's just one thing. If I am to tutor your son, the two of you must be prepared to hand him over to me entirely.
Of course.
So talk to your wife and think it over. Take your time.
Do you really think he could do something with Tito?
Why not? He's inherited many fine qualities from his parents. He just needs to learn how to orchestrate his gifts. Come in, Tito. How was school?
Oh, so-so.
I was just stretching my fingers. Do you like music?
I suppose so. They stopped my music lessons because I didn't practice enough.
If you have an hour to spare, Tito, might we go for a walk? I'd very much like to be shown something of your city. This is a particularly beautiful district. Such fine old houses.
You see that one over there? With the shield over the doorway? Those are the Designori coat of arms. That was our family home. But my father took it into his head to get rid of it and buy himself that modern box we live in now.
I understand why you must be sad to have lost such a fine home. But try to understand your father. He was a young man who wanted to build his own nest. He may have sold this place as a thrust against tradition, against his family and all they stood for, but you can be sure that in doing so he hurt himself as much as anyone else. Have you noticed, Tito, how easily conflict between father and son arises? History is full of examples. And you? Are you going to make it your life's ambition to get the house back?
What would be so wrong with that?
If I met a Designori who acted according to the obligations that being from a great family imposes, who served the city and the country and devoted himself to matters of welfare and justice, and in the course of his career recovered his family home, I would think him entirely worthy. However, if the house were his only goal, his obsession at the cost of all else...
Yes, well, coming from Castalia, you can't be expected to understand. You don't have homes there, do you? Or families?
Back at Balzo, Josef rushed around secretly, trying to put everything in order before he left. At night, he studied the constitution and statutes of Castalia, still looking for the best means of escape.
A magister has the right to resign his office on grounds of conscience and even to leave the order. That may be true, but they won't let me go. It would be to admit that my request was justified, and that life in Castalia might, after all, even for a man in my position, be little more than denial and imprisonment.
We are approaching the end of our tale. As we have already indicated, our knowledge of this end is fragmentary. And so we take pleasure in quoting here, in this second-to-last chapter of Josef Konecht's life, from an authentic document, namely that voluminous memorandum in which the master of the glass bead game presents the reasons for his request to be released from his post.
The present-day Castalian lacks insight into his place in the world, huh? Castalia is an expensive luxury. The wave is already gathering, and one day it will wash us away. Now this. Listen to this, Joseph. More and more we are being forced to recognise that our most important and most honourable role is that of teaching at the humblest level. So, Joseph, what do you think?
Excellent, Fritz. I am wholly in your debt.
Joseph used very little of Fritz's draft in his final petition, which he kept as brief as possible. He had reached the point where he must leave his friend behind. The request Joseph submitted would be discussed and referred from one committee to another before a decision was made. Even so, a reply arrived sooner than he had expected.
Esteemed colleague, the Directorate of the Order and the Assembly of Masters have taken note of your perspicacious letter. We have found your historical observations no less absorbing than your ominous picture of the future. It really does not matter whether or not the political constellation is as you suggest. Our order has no right to act or intervene. Your request was decisively rejected.
The answer is the answer I knew would come, and that I myself would have given.
We have now reached the end of our journey, and hope that we have reported all the essential facts of the life of Joseph Connect. We have decided not to append an account of the Magister's last days, for we know no more about them than every Valsel student, and could not tell the story better than is done in The Legend of the Magister Ludi, many copies of which are in circulation. Presumably it was written by some of Connect's own students. It is with this legend that we shall conclude our book. We wish to preserve in our hearts the memory of our master, who so soon after his mysterious departure from Castalia departed from the world into a still more mysterious beyond. Yes. Yes. Here we are, chapter one.
You wanted to see me, Magister?
Yes. I'm leaving tomorrow and cannot be specific about my return. I'm putting you in charge of all current affairs. There are instructions on various matters here in this file.
I beg your pardon?
Did I not make myself clear?
Night had already settled on the inner courtyard as the Magister made his way to his friend Tegularius's room.
Joseph, how are you? What news from the front?
An old poem came to mind today, and I was wondering if you'd be able to help me with the rest of it. In all beginnings dwells a magic force.
In all beginnings dwells a magic force.
Yeah, just give me a moment. Here somewhere. Yes, thought so. Here it is. Yeah, Your Excellency's own early work. I thought you'd forgotten all about them.
Did I give that poem a title?
Transcend. Oh, look, you crossed it out later and scribbled something else there instead. Stages.
The two friends sat for a while and discussed the poem, and then the Magister went to bed. The following morning he rose, as usual, ordered his car, and drove off into... oh, the mists of early autumn. At noon, he arrived at the president's house carrying a casket, a handsome metal casket, containing the insignia of his office, his seals and keys. How strange was his situation! How strange the nature of Joseph Connect's own mind!
What has brought you here like this?
Do you really have no idea?
I suppose I do. I was hoping perhaps you might have reconsidered. And I have to say, I have been wondering if the board's response to your letter was not perhaps a little terse.
Not at all. I didn't expect any other response, but nor could I obey it.
I see. And you expect me to endorse and support your plans?
No. I have come only to tell you that I am, today, leaving Waldzell forever.
Josef Knecht, you have been the most esteemed and cherished of my colleagues, and now here you are, depositing the insignia of your office as if it were a suitcase, declaring that you are no longer magister or member of the board or even a brother of the order, no longer a Castalian, and you act as if you have dropped in to say goodbye. As far as I am aware, you have not as yet broken any rules, but such behavior is inconceivable. Appalling. Truly appalling. You have abandoned all reason and are running amok.
Running amok as I am, I have paused to express my gratitude and to ask if I can leave my car here at your disposal.
Why would you leave your car?
I will continue on foot. Goodbye, President. And thank you.
2 days later, Josef arrived at the house of Plinio de Signori.
Josef, you've done it. You're here.
Yes, yes, I'm here.
We've been so anxious, my friend. What a step you have taken.
I'll tell you about my departure in good time, but first let me greet my pupil, and of course your wife. I'd like to get started as soon as possible.
I've squared things with Helena. She was reluctant to hand the boy over to you entirely, but came round in the end. So here's the plan. We have a little cottage in the mountains at Belpunt. Lovely place, right on the lake. And I thought it would be just the thing. You and Tito can go up there right away. I've sent one of the staff to open it up and look after you. Stay as long as you like. Look, here are some photos. What do you think?
It looks very fine. But where is Tito?
They talked for a long time, and still the boy did not appear. Eventually the door opened. It was Tito's mother.
Oh, this is terribly awkward. He appears to have vanished.
Nonsense, my dear. He'll be around somewhere.
I don't think so. He's been gone all day.
All day? Why did no one mention this to me?
Well, at first I thought he'd gone for a walk, and then maybe that he'd met someone for lunch, and then that he'd forgotten the time. But now, I think... I don't know what to think.
Permit me a question.
Of course.
The boy knew about your plans and that I was arriving today.
He did.
Then I wouldn't worry. He's used to a great deal of freedom, and so it's only natural that he would want to make one last defiant gesture before knuckling down to work with me. Madam, why not send word to his friends that we are looking for him? Otherwise, I really wouldn't worry.
Yes, you're right. Thank you. I'll do that straight away.
That child will be the death of me.
Plinio, you look as if your son has been carried dead into the house. He's not a child anymore, and it's unlikely he's been run over or eaten deadly nightshade. I've been observing you for many years, my friend, and if I may say so, you are not sufficiently armored. You people of the world are so exposed to suffering and care, and yet so unequipped to deal with them. Remember what Castalia taught you about the power of intellect and meditation. Calm your breathing and show me to Tito's room. We may find a clue there. What a confusion of things.
It's just a boy's room. Help me, Josef. Where should we look? What are we looking for?
A notebook. And, as I thought, a note.
Let me see.
Dear Dad, dear Ma, I've gone to the mountains. Don't worry. I will wait for my tutor there. I just wanted one last jaunt before I become his prisoner.
Prisoner? I'm sure he doesn't mean
it. Oh, don't worry. I quite understand. I'll leave for Belpunt tomorrow and we'll probably find the boy already there. Now go and tell your wife the good news.
As he rode through the brisk September morning, Connect chatted happily to the chauffeur and took pleasure in the beautiful scenery. He pulled his wooden pipe from his pocket and played a tune. I hardly think so. They drove towards the foothills and on into the high mountains, the journey leading them from fading summer deeper into autumn. On up the serpentine mountain road, past crashing waterfalls and steep ravines. On past the thinning trees, into the rough and rocky world of the mountains, amid whose bleakness and austerity the flowering meadows bloomed with all the more loveliness. Oh, really? At last they reached the cottage, tucked away by a lake under grey cliffs into which it seemed to disappear. There was a figure at the door.
Magister, let me help you with your bags. I'm sorry, I hope you didn't think me rude. I just wanted to... Well, I don't know what I wanted.
I understand, Tito, I understand. And by the way, you are to call me Herr Knecht from now on. I am no longer Magister.
Come and see my flowers and my butterflies. I've been collecting them here each summer since I was a child, and I know all their names. Their proper names, I mean.
I'd like to, but... Do you know... I'm feeling rather tired. Yes. Very tired. A little dizzy, even. Perhaps it is the air.
Knecht was feeling strangely empty and light-headed. His heartbeat had become jittery and left him out of breath.
Are you all right, Master?
Just tired. It's nothing.
When do we start?
We'll start in the morning.
Do we have a curriculum? I didn't know which books to bring. How will we begin?
We'll go for a long walk, and you can tell me all you know about the local flora and fauna. Now I must retire. It's only the journey. We are, after all, 7,000 feet higher than where I woke up this morning. If you'll show me to my room.
Knecht woke long before dawn, and found a dressing gown laid out for him. He put it on. And left the house by the rear door, heading towards the bathing hut by the lake. The water lay grey-green and motionless before him, under a cliff rising to a jagged crest, sheer and cold in the thin, green, cool morning sky. Knecht could sense that beyond this crest the sun had already risen, and that in a few minutes the lake would be flooded with light.
Herr Knecht, good morning.
I see you are ready for a swim.
You've come just in time for dawn. Isn't it glorious up here? Absolutely glorious.
I can see you're in your element. An early riser, a runner, a wrestler, a hiker. You are a child of nature, are you not?
Here it comes. Look.
A fragment of the rocky crest flashed violently, like metal starting to melt. The crest blurred, and it too started to melt. The dazzling sun appeared, and at once the house, the shore, the man and the boy were overwhelmed by its radiance. The boy, feeling the glory of the moment and the glory of his youth, started to move and then to dance. His steps flew in homage towards the sun and retreated from it in reverence. His outspread arms embraced the mountain, lake, sky. He offered himself up, his youth, his freedom, his burning sense of his own life. His eyes closed, his face fixed, his whole filled with a kind of fanatical gravity. The moment passed. The boy stopped dancing and opened his eyes. He did not know what to do next. He had to think of something to say. So he pointed across the lake to the opposite shore.
If we swim very fast, we could just about reach the other side before the sun.
A swimming race. A race against the sun. The words were barely uttered when the boy turned and dived into the water. Knecht watched the boy cut through the blue-green surface of the water, moving swiftly away. He had not come out of the house that morning intending to swim, but he thought that after a night of such discomfort, it might do him good. He walked to the edge of the water, threw off the dressing gown, took a deep breath, and dived in. The lake was fed by glacial waters. and even at the height of summer, retained an icy chill. He could see the boy swimming far ahead of him, so strong, so alive. He believed he could catch up with him. To him, this was just a swimming race. He didn't understand that it was already a race against death. He fought as long as he could, until his heart gave out. The young swimmer had turned back, often, to see his tutor following behind. And then he looked back and couldn't find him. He turned back. He looked and called.
Herr Knecht? Where are you? Please, God, let him be all right. I'm coming back. I'll save you, Master. I'll save you. Where are you? Please, God, no. God, no. No. It's hopeless. I can't see a thing. What have I done?
Staggering, breathless, the boy climbed ashore. He found the dressing gown and, without thinking, picked it up and began to rub his body dry until some warmth returned to his skin. He sat in the sun and stared into the water, whose cool blue-green surface looked blankly back at him. So empty. So alien. As his strength returned to him, Tito started to grasp what had just happened and what it would mean. He was guilty of the death of Josef Knecht. And only when he properly understood that Knecht was dead did he realize how important this man was to him. He knew, rationally, that he had not actually killed him, and that his death wasn't, even logically speaking, his fault. But now he had this guilt. And he knew that from that day forward, everything would be different. He had changed, and his life had changed forever. And what had happened would demand more from him than he had ever yet demanded of himself.
Glass Bead Game, the biographer was played by Derek Jacobi, Josef Knecht by Tom Ferguson, Fritz by Toby Haydock, and the music master by Malcolm Rayburn. Plinio was played by David Seddon, Helena by Alwyn May, the President by Terence Mann, and Tito by Oliver Gom. The Glass Bead Game by Hermann Hesse
was dramatised by Lavinia Greenlaw and directed in Manchester by Susan Roberts.
And that was the final part of the Glass Bead Game, which I'm a little sad about, to be honest, because I like Derek Jacobi, who has played at least two emperors, Claudius and Augustus, in his career, so could probably have given us some advice about our upcoming imperial visitor. But never mind, because at the same time next week, we'll be embroiled in Doctor Who Protect and Serve.
You're leaving the seventh dimension.
That's your lot for tonight, I'm afraid, but do join me tomorrow for the final parts of Wally K. Daly's The Silent Scream and Ice, Martin Jameson's sci-fi retelling of The Snow Queen. I've been Natalie Haynes. I'll see you tomorrow.
Hello, Wes Butters back with you, and welcome to 4Extra's Late Night Listening.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
1am, and in a second, 4Extra's season of Desert Island Discs featuring TV writers continues, followed at 1:45 by another short story from the acclaimed debut collection of Patina Gapper, a real rarity to enjoy later, the half-hour interview that Evelyn Waugh gave for the programme Face to Face. The interviewer recalled him being tough work to question, so we can listen out and judge for ourselves in 1 hour. Now then, we revisit a classic edition of Desert Island Discs, and this week it's one from 1991. The host, Sue Lawley, and the castaway, playwright Alan Bleasdale.
My castaway this week is a playwright. Like a lot of this country's best post-war writers of drama, he comes from the north. In his case, it's Liverpool, where he still lives and whose characters people his most famous plays. He respects them, but he still makes them funny. He loves their city, but he's not afraid of showing its warts. And Liverpool, which has produced so many entertainers, is now, thanks to Boys from the Black Stuff and GBH, an entertainment in itself. Their author is Alan Bleasdale. And Liverpool is home, Alan, where you live and work and which you hate leaving, is that right?
Yeah, it's... I don't want to give the impression that I'm running around town flaunting myself. You know, I go to Marks and Spencer's and I go to the theatre when there's something worth seeing. But basically, Liverpool is a hideaway and the hideaway is our home.
Home is where you hide away with all the family noise around you and it's where you do all your work.
For 15 years, I worked out of what was the top attic in a terraced house, then a top attic in a rather nice end of cottage, like three cottages together. And the house we moved into 6 or 7 years ago, because our eldest boy then was just in his teens, I regrettably, I'm afraid, and foolishly gave him the attic because I knew that one day he'd want to have a life of his own with us. And I wished to God I hadn't, because I ended up in a converted toilet outside the house. And it's very noisy. My father, who worked in an oil refinery for all his working life, tends to equate work with noise, and he doesn't feel he's justifying his working capacity if he isn't making a noise. And for his 69th birthday, we asked him what he wanted, and he said he wanted a cement mixer. And, well, we got it him. And basically what happened was that... I had to leave our house to go and find a place to work because he then bought about 3,500 paving stones and decided that the garden looked attractive when it was paved. And I used to be in the downstairs converted toilet trying to write, and my dad's cement mixer would be outside the window, and every so often he'd shout through the noise, "I'm not bothering you, am I, lad?" So with the greatest of respect and love for my dad, I thought, I'll go and find an office. And I stayed in an office for 18 months till all the paving was done and my dad sold the cement mixer and I come home. It's fine to work there now. I just can't work anywhere else.
But now, is there any inspiration for you for your writing at all on a palm-fringed beach all alone, miles from anywhere?
Well, strangely enough, for 3 years, from 1971 to 1974, my wife and I were basically running away. lived in the Gilbert Nellis Islands, which is nearer to a palm fringe beach than you could ever imagine. I mean, it was the particular island we lived on was 80 yards wide and 100 yards long. We had to play football sideways. I mean, it was a very minute, like, stick in the ocean. So I was preparing for Desert Island Disc 20 years ago.
Yeah, but you're going to be all alone on this one, you see. That makes a difference, doesn't it?
Well, I don't think I could actually survive for very long.
What's the first record you're going to put on this island?
Well, it's Duke Ellington's Take the A-Train, because when the cement mixer forced me briefly from the house, I took an office in Liverpool, which was a slight mistake because I was above what was described as a model's agency, but certainly wasn't, and beneath an insurance company, and I really couldn't get much peace there. So I taped all of Duke Ellington's work on 120 minutes of tape, and for 8, 9, 10 hours a day, I would just play Duke Ellington all the time. And it took away the curse of the bouncing bodies and the bouncing checks.